Hi, welcome to a special edition of Saints Happy Hour Podcast. A friend of mine, he's from Canal Street Chronicles. He's John Sigler. He does all the scouting, awesome stuff on Canal Street Chronicles. He went to the Senior Bowl this week, so I figured we had to get somebody that went to the Senior Bowl, and I didn't want one of the national talking head guys, because they don't really know the Saints roster. John knows the Saints roster. He's a fan, so when I ask him Saints-related questions and all that, he's not going to give me the general bullshit. I looked at a roster 5 minutes ago. He's going to be like, yeah, no, Ralph, you don't know what you're talking about. Come on, you know better than that. So, John, thanks for joining us, guy. I consider you like you're like a Twitter pal, right? We're friends, you know?
Yeah, man. Yeah, absolutely.
He's like, yeah, whatever. I can't believe I'm doing this on a Saturday. So John, you go to Mobile, right? And the thing is, I feel like, and just feel free to shoot down this theory, but a lot of people, you know, the Saints look 2017 draft, it was maybe the best. I mean, not only was it the best Saints draft ever, I think you can argue maybe it's the best NFL draft in the last 30 years. I mean, they hit it out of the park. Every pick was a home run practically. And, you know, people are like saying, now, well, look, they're closer to the Super Bowl. They can take some more risks. They can be more aggressive and maybe take some character issues or maybe even be more aggressive trading up. But the more I think about it, John, I think they're not going to go that way. And that Sean Payton, if you listen to interviews, he said, look, the last couple of years, we really refocused on football smarts, character, and we looked at injury history. And I don't think they're going to go away from it. If anything, I think they're going to be like, that's what's worked the last 2 or 3 years. We're doing that, and we're doubling down on that, and we're going to take less risky guys. Is that a fair theory to have?
Yeah, I think so. And we've seen a lot of that change the more that Jeff Ireland has kind of ingratiated himself into the organization, gotten himself more involved, kind of spoken up a little bit more in meeting rooms and things like that. He's done a lot to change their team philosophy. I feel like he learned a lot from the many mistakes he made running the Dolphins into the ground. And so he's really turned into a great asset for the Saints. Guys I talked to in Mobile who had covered him when he was in Miami were just stunned at the turnaround he's seen, and they seem like they're the national perception is very, very positive for Jeff Ireland and his influence and the things he's introduced into the Saints team building philosophy. Now, some of that does come from the Saints themselves. I mean, Sean Payton's talked about how they want to get back to more of their 2006 model when he first came in. They're looking for kind of sure things, real football guys, kind of not your, you know, guys going out clubbing all the time, which, to be fair, Kamara and Lattimore have gotten their run out of the nightclub scene in New Orleans, from what I hear. But they're definitely putting an emphasis on football first, and that's what we're seeing. I think you're on the money. I don't foresee them getting off that route. I mean, the only kind of crazy YOLO scenario that comes to mind would be something like Baker Mayfield being available at the Oakland Raiders pick, and Peyton and John Gruden work out some kind of a crazy trade. Beyond that, I just don't see them doing anything to blow things up and kind of keep it rolling here for the 2 years.
Well, here's the thing. We'll get right to it, because that was the talk, and that's sort of been the thing. Is Baker Mayfield, Saints fans love him because he's short, so he's like short like Drew Brees, but he's more athletic, although Drew Brees is more athletic than people give him credit for, obviously. And so Baker Mayfield's been the guy. But my question with him is his off-the-field stuff, let's start there. Do you think it's sort of overblown? I feel like his off-the-field stuff, they want to shuffle him into Johnny Manziel, but I don't think he's that at all. I mean, he's done some dumb stuff, but nothing like crazy dumb.
Yeah, he's not going out drinking on Friday nights before games on Saturdays like Johnny was known to do. He's not out there, I mean, fighting his coaches on the sideline. He's not doing all kinds of crazy stuff. Now, other people do know more about Baker than I do. Keep an eye out on Robert Klimko for SI.com. He's working on a great long-form series the next few months where he's evaluating Baker the way NFL teams do. They've got part one up already, which goes into his the process at the Senior Bowl with interviews and whatnot. And they've got a lot of great content coming out. So keep an eye out on that. That's going to give you a lot of insight. But Baker, I'm not worried about his character, about him as a person. I mean, just from speaking with his teammates in interviews at Media Day, seeing the way people talk about him, I mean, people who know him better than I do, who have been around him longer, I would say he's on that spectrum of your Brett Favre, your Johnny Manziel guys who like to live a little.
Hey, man, we all like to live a
little. But he's definitely as much
I'm
of a football.
Right now.
Yeah, but he's just as much of a football nerd as Breeze and the Mannings and all those guys. That's not an issue in my mind.
Yeah, the one thing I did love about Baker Mayfield, one quote that just I loved it is he was saying, "Look, I'm short and I can't see over dudes, but nobody can see over a 6'8" left tackle. And let me tell you something: if you don't see a dude till he's open, you're late. You have to anticipate." And that's what it is, man. Quarterbacking, I forgot who wrote it. They said it's like time traveling. You got to predict the future, right, on the throws. You can't. If the dude's open, you're late, right? So here's my question with Mayfield that fascinates me, and since you're there. I get the sense that, man, when he gets in those interviews, like, coaches are going to fall in love with him. Just the like his personality. Like, some fans like hate the bravado, but I feel like a lot of coaches will love that. So like that'll move him up the board. What was your sense of like talking to people that like the vibe around Baker Mayfield that teams were like, I didn't really like him, or man, more and more teams are falling in love with him?
That's really it. I mean, he's so charismatic. We talk about these guys who are like a magnetic personality, and that's what Baker is. I mean, people talk to him, and they fall in love with the dude. And it's really easy to see why. He's the guy you want on your side, who's taking charge of your locker room, who's calling plays, who's really at the wheel of an offense. And that's what we saw happen in Oklahoma, where he's out there running things, and he knows everybody's responsibility on every play. He's not riding with training wheels by any means. And I mean, coaches are a fan of him. Sean Payton's a believer, according to all reports that have come out so far. But so are people like John Dorsey and John Elway, who know a thing or two about quarterbacks in the NFL.
Does John Elway really know about quarterbacks? I mean, he can play quarterback awesome, but his track record of picking ones.
Well, John Elway is convinced that he knows a thing or two about quarterbacks.
I'm just saying. Paxton Lynch is kind of terrible. He was going to pay off.
I would say the evidence is there.
I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah.
So other players, John, like we're looking at tight end is another need where we look at the Saints and we're like, Josh Hill might be the only one back. You know, they might move. Kobe Fleener might retire because he's had concussion issues. He may not be back. His contract isn't that much. So they may be in the market for a free agent tight end and a draft one. So what did you see at tight end that you liked, and what did you see about guys that you're like that you kind of like were circling and like, oh, that's a Saints guy. And on the flip side, like guys that maybe in the consensus is that people like them a lot, but you're like, I don't think he'll fit with the Saints.
Yeah, right off the man, it sucked. Right off the bat, two of the guys I was looking at, Dallas Goedert from South Dakota State and Adam Brenneman from UMass, they both dropped out of practice an hour into it on Tuesday. They both pulled their hamstrings. They're getting ice bags, duct tape around their legs, and they're done for the week an hour into practice in Mobile. So that in a way, that limited my search, but then again, those were two guys I was really dialed in on going into this event. But as far as the dudes who were actually there, Mike Gesicki from Penn State really took a lot of the headlines, and deservedly. I mean, I don't know that anybody plays the ball in the air better than he does as far as having the body control to go up and catch passes thrown behind him or make himself hit open, things like that. He's just really great in the air. He kind of reminds me of Evan Engram from last year's draft. I don't know that he's going to be the athlete that Evan Engram was, but he shows a lot of the same qualities. One of those guys are known to be.
Is he going to be a first rounder, you think?
It really depends on how he runs. I mean, that the NFL puts so much emphasis on the 40-yard dash that, I mean, if he's a slow guy, if he runs in like the low 4.6s, if he's a 4.7, no, he'll probably go in the second round. Now, if he goes out there and runs a 4.55 or better, then you're going to see guys lining up to get ahead of the curve. Something I'm going to plant my flag on this hill now. I really feel like the Saints are going to end up being in a position to get a tight end in the first round, similar to how they got Stephon Anthony at linebacker a couple of years ago, where their explanation for that was, well, we feel that like there's about to be a big run on these guys in the second round at this position. We want to get ahead of the curve, get our top guy, whoever it may be.
That's interesting. Whether
it's Goeder, whether it's somebody else.
So you're saying,
I really feel like that's the direction this thing's going to turn out.
That's good and bad, because the 2015 draft, they had a lot of good linebackers. The Saints picked the wrong one. So it's good.
Exactly.
I like
that. Man, if they would have got Eric Kendricks like we were all telling them to do,
right? Just listen to Saints Twitter. Yeah.
Exactly. Read the tweets. Come on, y'all.
Yeah, exactly. The bad tweets of people we like, we just delete them and pretend like they never happened. But the people we knew, we just grab on. You know, I'll be honest, I didn't hate the Stanley Jean-Baptiste pick. I didn't hate it. I wasn't like a huge fan of it, but I was like, eh, maybe.
Oh, me neither.
Yeah, you know, he's got size. He can run that Ryan's game.
You're not a real Saints. You're not a real Saints blogger if you don't have a 3,000-word SJB piece somewhere on the internet.
Exactly.
Like, if it's not still up, you're not real. You're not legit.
I wrote a piece during Robert Meacham's first year that said he was the worst Saints draft pick of all time. Because he was a first round pick, and it was 10 games into the year, and he had not been active 1 week. So that one turned out.
He didn't take his hoodie off until like.
Yeah. So I mean, that's the thing with the draft. You never know. But another position that I'm curious about, and this was an article, and I forget who wrote it. But it was a great piece about wide receivers, and it was a piece of, you know, we all think of wide receivers. You can't think of them as all the same. Like teams, right? You have usually teams go five deep at wide receiver, and you need the slot guy, you need the outside guy, and you need. It's like a basketball team where each guy fills a different position, and that's the thing with the Saints. Like they don't need obviously you'd love if you could draft another Michael Thomas. You'd plug him in, it would be great. But the Saints don't really need a Michael Thomas per se. If they could just find a guy that could be a slot and turn into what Willie Snead was last year, they'd be great, right? So who's a guy at the wide receiver position that you were looking at and you were like, oh, that guy, he's a potential Saints guy. He's a potential Saints guy.
Yeah. Okay, just real quick before I get into that, there's one guy I know the Saints were interested in. That's Durham Smythe, that tight end.
Okay.
Before we move into the receivers, I want to touch on him real quick. He's out of Notre Dame. He's a former basketball player, so we can bring back all our Jimmy Graham jokes.
I like that.
We can. Now Smythe wasn't used as a receiver a whole lot because Notre Dame's offense has been kind of LSU-esque the last few years. It's been pretty rough, but I mean, he showed everything you want to see. He got himself open. He was separating downfield, making plays down the seam. He's got good size. That's a name to file away, Durham Smythe. Now, on to the receivers, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, is he sort of, would you know, not just because he plays basketball, but would you slide him into the Jimmy Graham category where Jimmy Graham, he was awesome for the Saints, and he was phenomenal. But his rookie year, he didn't really get going until December. And then he broke his foot and he was out. And I firmly believe that Jimmy Graham missing the playoff game in Seattle is why they lost, because they sucked inside the five. But that's a different story, right? But he's not going to be like a plug and play guy. Probably he's going to be like a guy. He'll be okay, but he's going to be
probably not. He'll be much more of a Josh Hill than a Jimmy Graham. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but that's just kind of the expectation to have with him. He's not 6'7". He's not running like a deer out there, but he's just solid all around. He's not going to let you down. If you need 7-8 yards, he'll get you the 7 or 8 yards. No problem.
Can he be a 40 catch guy?
As far as Jimmy Graham-like talents? Potentially. I mean, he's a smart guy. He picked up the offense really well. He had a really great chemistry with Baker Mayfield. Like, that stood out pretty quickly. that these two guys were clicking together, and he knew where to be to get the ball. So, 40 catches, I think that's a reasonable expectation out of a guy like Smythe, a guy like Jazicki. This tight end class has 7 or 8 guys who are starting quality tight ends.
So from, you're saying seven, right eight, seven, seven and, or eight tight ends are going to go like first 4 rounds?
Yeah. I mean, most of them are probably going to go second, third round. That's just where tight ends tend to go. But, I mean, everybody I was talking to was just blown away by the guys who were here in Mobile and the guys who were underclassmen who are training to run the 40-yard dash right now. It's kind of like the wide receiver class a couple years ago where you had Brandon Cooks, Sammy Watkins, Odell Beckham Jr., all these guys who are all obviously starting quality upper-level talents. I mean, we're seeing the same thing this year at tight end. I think the Saints are in a great spot to cash in on that and kind of take their pick of the litter there at 27. Now, whether that ends up happening, who knows? I mean, maybe, God willing, Roquan Smith is available.
Oh, my God.
But if
Roquan Smith gets to 15, Saints Twitter is going to be offering Gallier Hall, the Smoothie King Center, Boogie's one healthy Achilles tendon to get Roquan Smith to move up. Like it's gonna be a zoo. I'll be for it. Here's an interesting thing that I think, you know, people don't. It's one of those things you don't realize, but as you get into the offseason, and me and Andrew, we start talking about offseason topics and stuff for podcasts because you get to the dead time. You know, the more I think of it, John, offensive line is going to be a sneaky need for the Saints because you figure, look, Zach Strief, love him. He's a Saints Hall of Famer, but he's probably retiring, right? Calumete, I think the way offensive line play in the NFL is so bad, I think there's potentially either a team that's going to say, come start for us at guard, or potentially a team that's going to say, you're our right tackle. And if they say he's the right tackle, he's getting $7, $8 million a year for 4 years, so it's not inconceivable that he gets 4 years, $30 million, $14 million guaranteed, and the Saints are like, sorry, buddy, we love you, take the money. So then the Saints are down 2 offensive linemen. You got to have depth because the offensive line was decimated with injuries this year, but it held together because Pete can play tackle or guard, Calumete can play anywhere you need him, and it gave him this great depth and flexibility. So if both of those guys go out the door, suddenly offensive line becomes a need. What did you see at offensive line? Anyone that really jumps out at you? And do you think that's a possibility at 27?
Yeah, I think it's a real possibility. The best option was not in Mobile. That's Billy Price. He's a surprise. He's a Ohio State Buckeye. He's a captain.
Oh my God!
He plays center and guard in Columbus. He's like Calumete on steroids, basically. He set the school record in consecutive starts. Right now, he's practicing with LaCharles Bentley. I believe his facility's in Arizona. And that place is just an O-line factory.
Can he play tackle?
So he's going to be technically sound. You know he's committed.
Could he play tackle?
He has not played tackle. He hasn't done it, but I'm not going to say he won't be able to. Just because you just don't know. We don't know, I mean, how his kick slide is or whatever. But as far as guys in Mobile, the name to watch is Alex Kappa. He's just a monster out of Humboldt State. He had a rough day today at left tackle. Just some of the matchups there weren't really in his favor. But dude is as technically sound as they come. I mean, as far as keeping his feet clean, timing his punches and everything, He was somebody who was getting hyped up at media day before practice starts, so I knew to keep an eye out for him. We get out there, and he's just leveling guys and winning his matchups one-on-one and just had a really great week. Will Hernandez is another name. He's a guard from UTEP. He's nasty. I mean, he's nasty as hell. I think he lost maybe 2 reps all week in one-on-ones and was just bulldozing people and – I mean, he was just a bulldozer out there. So O-line, I agree, that's a sneaky need. And let's elaborate on your nightmare scenario a little bit more. Say Zach Strief retires. Say that Calumete leaves in free agency. Well, now you're down with Teron Armstead, who's coming off another injured year, and the plan to replace him if he goes down is Andrew Speed coming off of a broken leg late in the season.
Yeah.
So at that point, you are just the cupboard is pretty bare.
You're playing the Rebius or Cameron. You know that, and that's the thing, right? You gotta have bodies, and that's the thing that made the Saints this year, I think, their roster was so much better than we thought it was going to be, is because when the injuries hit at offensive line, it was bad, but that was one of their deepest spots, and they never had to turn to a UDFA guy, right? That was like a rookie or a second year guy, where you're like, oh Jesus, this is going to be bad. This is a turnstile. Like, they never had to do that, right? So that was the key. And here's the thing about that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, the guy I look at in that situation you just described is Cameron Tom. He was an undrafted free agent out of Southern Miss. He came in underweight. In previous years, he would have been starting by week 11 or 12 and probably been a turnstile, like you're saying. Instead, he's able to get promoted from the practice squad to the active roster. He's able to keep down in his protein shakes, get his weight up, and get ready for next
year.
And
by the way,
they were in such a good... Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and he's one of those guys sort of like Calumet, where they want to have him keep him around and get him in the system. And he's a guy that other teams wanted, and the Saints, before they elevated him to the roster, you can do the thing where you say, look, he's not on the roster, but we're going to pay him like he's on the roster. And that's a case of, you know, the Saints
did. Yeah, at one point, he was the highest paid practice squad player in the NFL.
Yeah.
To kind of keep other teams from coming sniffing around. But that didn't work. They had to promote him to the active roster.
Yeah.
But it worked out in the end.
Yeah. And but that's a case of, you know, you could tell, you know, as he was the highest paid practice squad player, the Saints obviously went to him and said, look, we know you can go wherever you want, but there's a plan for you here. And I think he's a guy to keep an eye on, and that's a guy with depth. The one thing that's interesting to me about offensive line is, you know, I used to, when I worked 1,000 years ago at WWL with Buddy D and Mike D'Antilia, I used to try to pick their brain, and I would talk to Mike D'Antilia, and I would say, Mike, what's the hardest position to scout? And he would say quarterback. And I'd say, what's the easiest? And he would say, it's offensive line, because they do something on every play. And then I talked to Mike D'Antilia last year, and he's like, offensive line is so hard to grade now, because all these college teams, they run the spread, and these linemen don't have to do anything, and it's really a projection. So is that the case, too, kind of at the Senior Bowl, where, like, these guys, you think they might be one thing, but then you get them in the pro-style offense, and it's like, oh, not what we thought.
Yeah, it can be like that, and something we saw that with specifically was the Oregon tackle. I think his name was Tyler Crosby. I want to say that was his name. But he's coming from Oregon, where they're running 70, 80 plays a game, where he's rarely actually touching anybody. And so whenever he did get his hands on somebody, he looked okay on tape. Then you get him in Mobile, and it's like a whole new world for him, because mm-hmm. he's going up against these 270, 280-pound monsters he's never hasn't seen since high school. So that is something we see, and I think that's why the Saints are focusing so much on O-line from really run-heavy college teams,
yep.
like Wisconsin, Stanford. They won't guys who they know can get to their spot, get their hands on a guy, and move him. And they'll let Dan Rauscher and his assistants focus on pass pro sets and refining technique and conditioning and getting these guys up to speed as a pass protector.
Yeah, and so now we go and we look at defense. And, you know, my thought is, I feel like the Saints, they need a dude at linebacker. You know, their linebackers this year were okay.
Man, that's what I've been saying.
You know, they need a Vilma.
That's been a big point of contention, yeah.
They need a Vilma. Like, Vilma, went before his knee gave out in 2011, from 2008, 9, and 10, that dude was good. You know, and he made plays, and you could see him, and he popped out on the screen on defense. Saints don't really have a linebacker. Although Manti Te'o, give it to him. He had some really good games in December. I don't know if he could do it the whole year, but they need a dude. But what's going to be there at 27? And what did you see at the Senior Bowl? A guy you're like, oh yeah, he'd look good in the Saints uniform.
Man, you know, I wouldn't say any of the linebackers really stood out in a tremendous way at the Senior Bowl. The top seniors didn't attend. That's guys mm-hmm. like Rashawn Evans from Alabama. They chose not to go. So you ended up with a lot of kind of lower level guys there. The best of the bunch, in my opinion, was Shaquem Griffin from UCF. Dude just flies around. I mean, he's got extremely high energy.
Is that the dude with one hand?
Played a lot of different roles. He is. And
he's my hero because I only have one hand. He's my new hero. The Saints need to draft him. Oh, I will buy his jersey.
Oh. Man, I'm all for it. I mean, dude's a playmaker. Stats are only worth so much. But if you compare him to Reuben Foster's college career, it's just two totally different players as far as turnovers, splash plays, things like that. And you turn on the tape, and it looks that way, too. And that's what we saw in senior bowl practice.
I mean, he's got to be a
Griffin. He had some.
No, he's. I saw him in the plays. He is a freak running because the dude only has one hand, so he must have some other athletic skill to compensate for only having the one hand. Like, and I think it's that he can just run and destroy people.
Yeah, he can just move. I mean, he knows how to get around blocks. He knows how to fight through blocks as far as keeping himself clean and shedding off of guys on the move. He's just nice through there. Phil Savage said this he's the director of the Senior Bowl and everything. In his opening press conference, he said that the floor, the minimum expectation for Griffin at the next level is an 8-year player on special teams. Who's going to round out your linebacker core as a reserve and just be a fan favorite covering punts and kickoffs. And if that's the least you're getting out of a guy like this, and anything on top of that is lightning out, you're in pretty good shape.
I mean, that's worth a fourth or a fifth round pick, right? If you could draft a guy that's going to be your special teams captain for a decade, you'd spend a fourth round pick on that. The one thing I will say about his hand issue, and this may sound kind of morbid, but it's true. You know, when Jason Pierre-Paul blew off his hand with the fireworks, a lot of people, including me, were like, "That he's done. You can't play defensive end with one good hand. It's not going to happen. I don't care that everything else is elite, but he's got the weird glove, and he's still good. Like he's still a 8 to 12 sack guy. So like, maybe it won't matter. Maybe he'll just." Yeah. Figure out a way to do it, you know? Go ahead.
Yeah, I agree. I want him in black and gold. But think of this, too. How often do we see a linebacker break his hand or break some fingers and put a club on and hardly miss a beat?
All the time.
I mean, we see that almost every week in the NFL.
Onyemata did it in the playoffs.
It's not an issue. Mm-hmm.
So yes.
Yeah. Oh, here's another fun fact. How many interceptions do you think Griffin has in his college career? knowing that he plays with one hand, how many interceptions do you think he's bagged?
Like four. How many?
Close. It's take the under three.
Three.
My man has gotten three interceptions in his college history, and. It's just not an issue for him at all.
Saints corners didn't have three interceptions. I don't think Saints corners as a group had three interceptions between 14, 15, and 16. It's not a problem.
Yeah, not a bit. Now, we kind of glossed over wide receiver, so I do want to double back on that real quick. But before we move in deeper on the defense, two guys who really stood out to me in the week. The first one was the best player at the Senior Bowl, and that's James Washington, a receiver out of Oklahoma State. Offense, defense, quarterbacks, whatever, he was the guy, the lead dog.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever he took the field, that's where all your scouts, your PFF guy, is that everybody was looking at James Washington. He won 10 of 12 reps in one-on-ones against press coverage over the course of the week. And the way he did that is just crazy. So he's a hair over 5'11", but he's got 34-inch arms. So he's got just a huge wingspan for a shorter guy, and he was not out-muscled by anybody all week. He can separate downfield. He can win 50-50 balls. He's just an elite receiver, and I would love to see the Saints get him at 27. I mean, he could really be that complimentary piece to – Michael Thomas. I was sitting between, let's see, that was Tuesday. So Tuesday I was sitting in the stands between two different coaching staff or scouting staff groups. I believe one of them was the Indianapolis Colts, and the other was the maybe Dallas Cowboys. It was NFC mm-hmm. East team. I know that. Anyway, so we're watching them, and these scouts around me are just raving about Washington when he's going through one-on-ones and team drills. One quote that stuck with me was them describing him as having all the best qualities of Jarvis Landry as far as his physicality and, I mean, running dudes over after the catch. And I mean, but on top of that, he's a legit vertical threat. He averaged something like 16, 17 yards per catch in college, has just produced year after year in a really high-powered offense.
Yeah.
And he's somebody who would fit right away in New Orleans. Now, if they don't want to go receiver at 27, which is understandable, guy to look out for is Michael Gallup out of Colorado State. Number one, first off, Gallup is a great name for a wide receiver.
Sounds like a name from Any Given Sunday.
Yeah, really. I mean, it's a scripted name. It's great. Now, his deal is he wins in a lot of the same ways Michael Thomas does, as far as making the hard stuff look easy. He just consistently called the ball away from his body. He didn't drop many passes. And once he got the ball in his hands, he could just slip right past guys and pick up another 4 or 5 yards or more. And he's somebody I could see the Saints looking at there, you know, on the maybe early mm-hmm. on the third day of the draft, thinking, you know, this guy's kind of a sleeper. He can come in and help us out in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
And he's somebody to watch out for. Now, back to defense. The only guy I saw shut down James Washington, now that I've hyped him up for you, the only guy to take him down was Saron Neal out of Jacksonville State. He's already become kind of a Saints Twitter draft crush already, as far as his skill set. So he's a slot corner, but he's kind of built in the same way as Kenny Vaccaro, as far as lining up all over the field. In that, you look at his highlight reel, and that, I mean, take that for what it is. But his first six plays, he plays slot corner, single high, box safety, slot corner. And he just makes plays all over the field, and that's reflected in his stat sheet. So I looked into that, his history. This past year, he played slot corner more than anything else. He had 12 pass deflections, one interception, 1.5 tackles for loss. That's kind of what you expect out of a slot corner, right? Mm-hmm. Two years ago, he mainly plays safety. He's playing in the box. This man had 15 tackles for loss and only 3 pass breakups. So that tells me he can play two different roles at a very high level. He can line up all over the field. And that's what we saw happen in Mobile, where he's just this physical dude,
you know,
who is always looking to hit somebody.
And the interesting thing about Jacksonville State is, not that they'll have a ton of tape, but they play big boy teams to get their paycheck to probably finance their football team so it can run, right? I mean, they play Ole Miss, they play Auburn, you know, they're a homecoming opponent for SEC teams, right? So you'll have tape against him against elite competition. So that'll be an interesting thing with him going forward, I think. You know, John.
Yeah, absolutely.
The interesting thing with this, with the Saints, you know, we talked about it at the beginning of the show about how, you know, they focused more on character, and that's and injury history is what was. Are there guys at the Senior Bowl that sort of either wowed or didn't, and have, like, injury is going to be their thing? Like, it's either if they show that they're healthy, they'll skyrocket up. If they aren't and they're hurt, they're going to plummet.
Yeah, the first guy that comes to mind for that is Adam Brenneman, tight end out of UMass. Physically, he's what you look for. He's like 6'5", like 255. He's just huge. I mean, got 10.5-inch hands. He's mm-hmm. the prototype mold for a tight end. His story in college so far has been getting hurt, transferring out of Penn State, going to UMass, excelling there, but he's kind of old. He missed a year of football, and he exits practice within an hour. Yeah. So he's somebody who, when you have him, it's great. But if you don't have him, I mean, you're SOL. Mm. So he's somebody to keep an eye out for. Other corners, I mean, who's another corner? Darius Phillips out of Western Michigan. He's another slot corner who has just incredible ability to play the ball at the catch point, to make turnovers, make big returns. He's one I really like as a punt return, kick return specialist. He's returned like seven combined kickoffs, punts, and interceptions for touchdowns the last 2 years. And he's had a clean bill of health through college, but he's another one who exits practice after the first day in Mobile because he rolled his ankle. So that could be serious. It could be not. I mean, it hasn't been a problem in college, but it was here in Mobile. Yeah. So that's something you kind of question. As far as the longevity thing, and two, with Phillips, he's one of those corners who's kind of small on the smaller side. I believe he measured in at 5'11", 190 flat, 192, something like that. So he's a little slider. You wonder how he's going to handle doing a lot of hitting over the next few years. But I wouldn't say there's anybody like Anzalone, who we know had issues year in, year out, or lingering issues with the shoulder. Most of the guys who have been hurt chose to stand out.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, and to me, you know, look, you never know how the draft is going to go because, listen, I consume probably as much, not maybe as much as you, but, you know, your draft stuff is awesome. Other people, I consumed a ton of it this past year because the Saints had two picks. And I can tell you, I didn't see a one where, like, people were like, you know, Marcus Lattimore, he's going to be there at 11. Like, that didn't even factor in to it, you know? So you never.
Oh, it didn't.
You know, you never know how it's going to go.
The day of the draft, I took, like, 2 hours out of my time to put an article together where I just read, like, something like 35, 36 different mock drafts and collected all the picks to say, these are the guys most commonly connected to the Saints. Not a single one had either Marshawn Lattimore nor Ryan Ramczyk to the Saints. Out of 36 different articles put out within 12 hours of the pick starting, nobody saw this coming for either one of the Saints selections. So it's really wide open at this point. We could do all our projecting and reading all the rumors we want. But at the end of the day, nobody's going to be able to predict what's going to go down.
Yeah, and
so
the way I look at it is
be as informed as you can and learn about prospects.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing I love about the on the clock is you can do the mock drafts, and I became addicted to it, and I did it, and I was trying to get Ramczyk at 32 for one of the mock drafts I did for WBL, but I did it like four times and I was going to have the Saints trade up to get him as like a sort of like a clickbaity thing to get people to read that WBL column. And I couldn't get it done. Like I couldn't do a realistic trade up to get, and he was there at 32. So, you know, what the hell, you never know.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing that was really interesting, I thought, and I thought the Saints were crazy to do it, but they were 100% right. They did not budge on the Malcolm Butler trade. They were like, look, we're not dealing you one of the high picks, New England, because we love the top 100 picks of this draft, right? And I was like, they're bonkers. There's nobody in the top 100 that's going to be as Malcolm Butler. Give New England what they want so you can get Malcolm Butler. But the Saints were 100% right because look at the 2017 draft. So I know it's early, John, but as you look at the 2017 draft, the top 100 picks – of it. Do you think 2018 is going to be the top 100 in 2018 is better, worse, or about the same?
I don't think the top 20, top 30 picks are going to be as good this year as they were last year. Just because we don't have these, you know, these elite talents like Myles Garrett, like Marshawn Lattimore. I mean, even guys like, you know, Deshaun Watson in the top 15. I don't see guys like that in this year's draft. Now, look, I'm a huge fan of Baker Mayfield. He's going to be a top 10 pick.
You think he's going to be top 10?
I liked Deshaun Watson last year.
You think Baker Mayfield's going to be top 10?
He's a lock at this point.
So that means he's out.
Top 10 pick.
That means he's out for the Saints then. We need the people that love him need to give up the dream. Because that's a lot.
I don't know that because Sean Payton is also heavily infatuated with Baker Mayfield, and I've shot this conspiracy theory off a few times already, but what happens if the Oakland Raiders are on the clock, Baker Mayfield's available, and Sean Payton is a phone call away from making a trade with John Gruden to get his boy?
John Gruden's got a 10-year, $100 million deal, so he can have a little patience.
Yeah. See, and, you know, that's more picks for Oakland to work with. And they've been one of the better drafting teams the last few years.
Man, no, that
so
would,
that it's just too wide open. Draft, though.
You'd get nothing.
Imagine the headlines. I mean,
yeah, you get well. You 2018, you'd get nothing because you'd be given. You'd probably have to give the Raiders your 2019 number one, and you'd probably have to give them your third for 2018. So, like, your 2018 draft would be Baker Mayfield, and he would be sitting. You know,
kind of. Well, that's what happened. That's what happened this past year. Was Kansas City traded up with Buffalo? They had 27-91 and their first rounder in the following year. That's what it cost them to move from 27 to 10.
Yeah.
And potentially that's what they cost the Saints is their first rounder and third rounder this year, next year's first. Who knows?
Well, keep talking about the top 100 of this year and what you think of it compared to last year.
Yeah, so I really feel like this year. Yeah, I really feel like this year's. The more I study this class and the more research I do, I really feel like this year, the strength of this year's draft is in picks 30 to 100 or even 30 to 90, where we have so many guys, I mean, especially the tight ends, there's so many options there that we didn't have in this past year's draft, where you had O.J. Howard and you had Evan Engram, and then it falls off a cliff at tight end after that. Where now, I mean, you've got so many possibilities. You've got Gesicki and Goedert, we've already talked about. Even Durham Smythe could sneak in there, but then you've got all these underclassmen. You've got Mark Andrews from Oklahoma, you've got Hayden Hurst from South Carolina, who is going to kill the combine. I mean, he could be a legit 4.5 40. I mean, he's a former baseball player, so he's another guy I'm really high on. He tracks the ball well. He doesn't care that he's got a safety flying in at his neck. Mm-hmm. He's gonna make that catch. And there's so many options at tight end that there's a number of really good guards and centers, interior O-line, who are going to be available in the second round of the draft. I'm just waiting for the Saints to start flipping all their late round picks into second and third round picks.
Well, that's the next question I was going to ask you. If you feel like if you feel like this draft isn't, you know, you mentioned the top 90. So if the draft, if the Saints view it as 2017, the top 100 isn't as good, you know, and this draft isn't as deep, those two fifths and two sixths don't do them any good. They may be like, you know what, we want player X, and we want him at 95. Hey, Kansas City, we'll give you the 2/5 and the 1/4 because we want to go here to 75. You know, so if you don't like the depth of the draft, you're much more likely, in my view, to burn picks 4th round and lower to get into that top 100 because the cliff that you just mentioned, it kind of falls off. If it doesn't go, if a team views this draft as like it's only 95 deep, you don't want after that, so it doesn't do you any good. So that may be a case where we see the Saints sort of do the Vaughn Bell thing, where they're trading up into the second round, or they're doing the Onyemata thing, and you know, and then they're doing more of it, and they have it seems like they have a lot of picks going in, but when they finish up, they might only get like 3 dudes because it's 3 dudes in the top 90, and all the excess pick is just burned
right
off.
And that's kind of. Yeah, and that's kind of the shape their roster is in. Is I don't see how they fit 8 rookies onto this team.
No way.
I mean,
no way.
They're going to be active in free agency, but is there room for 8 fresh faces on this roster? I don't think so. Now, is there room for 4 or 5 really high quality guys? Absolutely. I think this draft on paper it looks like last year's, where we had all these picks in the top 100, and we added multiple Pro Bowlers and everything. All these new starters, but I really think it's going to end up looking more like the draft from the year before last, where we got Michael Thomas, we got Sheldon Rankins, we got David Onyemata, we got Von Bell, where you're adding just really solid high floor players who you know can come in and contribute immediately. You're not really rolling the dice on these guys. And I don't have any insider trading info here. This is just me trying to read the tea leaves, so to speak, where that seems to be the move, where the Saints are going to make their board, and the way they do it is really interesting. So they have their in-house kind of top 100 guys who they know fit their program, fit what they want. And then over the course of the pre-draft process, they will whittle that down to 70, 60, 50 names who they prioritize. And that's when you see them make their moves to go get Alvin Kamara or Von Bell or David Onyemata. They make these draft day decisions. And I really think that's the way this is going to end up going. Another point to make really quick, this draft doesn't, in the same way that this draft doesn't have your blue chips, it doesn't have your Odell Beckham Juniors, it doesn't have your Joey Bosa's there at the top, it has tons of guys who are a really strong candidate for things Saints are looking for, like a second wide receiver or a third defensive end or a pass rush specific defensive end. And all of those guys are going to go in the second and third and fourth rounds of the draft, where the Saints currently don't have that many picks, but they're in great position to go and get those guys if they find someone they like.
No,
so,
that's.
I think you're right on the money. I mean, they're going to make a lot of moves.
Yeah, I mean, and this is the thing, and it's one of the things where I was, you know, I picked them 9-7 in 2017, so I wasn't right, but I was pretty bullish on I liked the roster better, and I was arguing with people. I was like, look, the days of the Saints having 3, 4, 5, 6 UDFAs making it, it's over. And so you can be excited about the guys that weren't drafted and they sign the next day, everybody gets pumped up. But those days are over, and that means your roster's really good. You don't want the Bobby Richardsons making your roster and starting six games their rookie year because they're a UDFA. You know, for every Pierre Thomas you find, there's 1,000 others that are terrible. So that's the thing with this roster. Like, I think, like you said, I think their draft class this year is going to be small, and I think rookie UDFAs to make the 2018 Saints, it is an uphill battle. I'd be stunned if more than 2 made it. And I think 2 is way high. You know, and that's just a case of, you know what, when you have 2015, 16, and 17 and your drafts are from good, better, awesome, suddenly your roster, it goes from rickety to pretty iron tough, you know?
Yeah, and that's what they've been emphasizing the last few years, is let's build a strong middle class on this roster. That's something Nick Underhill has done a great job highlighting, is the Saints going out and pursuing these middle-level guys who they're not going to hurt you. They're not going to make a lot of mistakes, and they're going to keep you from having to rely on cheap undrafted free agents every year. And that's why they're in such a great position now to do like you said and go out and look for these top shelf talents. You don't have to say, well, we're going to find some quality undrafted free agents. We don't have to do that anymore. They're not in a bad roster position anymore.
Yeah. Well, John, before I let you now, go ahead.
No, you're good.
No, I was going to say, before I let you go, I always find it amazing that guys like you are like, I'm going to the Senior Bowl, and I don't know anybody, I don't work for a team, I don't work for the newspaper, I'm just going, and I'm going because I want to go, I want to scout these players, I want to get into the NFL job, I want to get a media job, whatever. I always find that amazing because I did it a long time ago, and I was like, I can't do this anymore, I'm just going to get an SEO job because people think it's real, and I'm going to make a nice living, and I'm just going to write a fun column about Saints jokes. But you're going to the Senior Bowl and like trying to make a go of it, and I think that's awesome. So just give us a quick like view of like the experience of it, like trying to go. It's like a giant scouting thing, a huge scouting thing for the NFL, but it's like this giant like job fair of like people like you going trying to like make connections and like coaches looking for jobs. Like is it like a, I imagine it being, is it kind of like a zoo?
It's kind of like a circus. It's almost like a carnival atmosphere, but it's super awkward at times, like especially from a media perspective. The events that we're allowed to go to, like the weigh-ins and team lunches for media day, it's so weird, man. So I don't know if anybody's described this to you before or not, but weigh-ins are conducted in this big convention center hall, and it you can hear a pin drop. So you've got several hundred team officials and scouts and media crowded in the back of the room, and then there's a stage, and players go up there in their underwear and they get measured, and it's totally silent, and it's the most awkward thing imaginable, and everyone's uncomfortable, and they just refuse to change the format year after year. And then after that, we go to team lunch, and you have these players all, you know, sitting at tables eating the same buffet food that we get. But the media is like, crowded around them. They're, like, corralled in, and we're just watching these guys eat for 15 minutes before we're allowed to go chat with them. And it's just the most awkward, pregnant silence imaginable. But once it gets going and you're allowed to talk to the players and you're allowed to interview coaches and see what they're doing and see the scouts walking around, it's just a really cool, surreal event. Like, I'm at practice, okay? And I'm walking around and there's Vance Joseph and his staff with the Broncos out on the field. And I look and there is the Falcons coaching staff. They're watching the defensive line go through their drills. And, you know, I hate that I can spot Thomas Dimitroff at 60 yards, but the guy stands out with the hair and everything. And so I can see him. And then I look in the stands behind him and there's Jerry Jones sitting in the stands, you know, just chomping down on an unlit cigar, just taking in practice. And there is all these reporters that I follow on Twitter. It's not.com. There's Chris Burke with The Athletic. There's all these guys just kind of hanging out and socializing and taking in practice. And it's just a really unique atmosphere. It's definitely something to take in. And, you know, practices are open to the public. You can go to Lad Peebles and take it in. And it's something I would recommend for sure. I mean, if you're ever able to make the trip, go for it for a day and just have fun.
Yeah, it's the thing is with I remember like the Senior Bowl was a big thing, but it used to be, you know, I'm old. I'm, you know, over 40. It used to be like you'd have to consume like the Times-Picayune articles and maybe listen to like Mike Dettillier would go or Buddy D would have people on, and that was it. Now you've got Twitter. You got 9 million websites. Like people. I feel like people like that are like 25 and under, like you need to appreciate like all this draft info like that you get. It is you know, back in the day it was like woohoo, we got two articles in the Times-Picayune, and you got Mel Kiper's draft book and you got Mike Dettillier's draft book, and that was it. You know, now you can just gorge yourself on it. Yeah. It's just wonderful. People are like, I want the good old days. No, man, the good old days sucked for sports, man. Today is like where it's at for sports if you're a sports fan. But John, I appreciate you giving me time. I know you fought through it like a trooper and had a cold at the Senior Bowl, and it was great. So I appreciate it on Time Guy. So tell everybody, if they don't already know, go to Canal Street Chronicles, read this man. But how do they find you on Twitter?
Yeah, guys, if you enjoy the takes, you can find me at John_Sigler. That's JOHN_SIGLERRR. Somebody took the regular Sigler account name. But thanks for having me on, Ralph. I'm free any time as we get closer to the draft. I'm sure the Saints are going to do all kinds of dramatic stuff. So.
Oh, well, you know, of course we'll do the draft. And, you know, it seems like it's far away, but it'll be April before you know it, and we'll be, like, consumed with mock drafts. So, John, thanks for being on, and we'll have you on again, I'm sure.
I appreciate it, man. Y'all have a good one.